This week on Vox Talks, Andy Haldane on why we should be thinking in more detail about how we measure, model, and address the problems of regional inequality. Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. And welcome back to our final Vox Talk from the SWEF DNB conference at the Dutch Central Bank in Amsterdam. For half a century, SWEF conferences have provided a forum for academics and policymakers to discuss financial markets, institutions, and regulation. This year, regional inequality is high on the conference agenda, and if you wanted proof that it's also on the policy agenda as well, look at who's giving a keynote. Andy Haldane, Chief Economist at the Bank of England.
So, the richest and most productive region of the EU is London. But London is, by some margin, the most miserable place in the UK. And my casual empiricism of coming to work every morning confirms that.
If you were thinking it's odd for a central banker to be interested in questions of regional inequality, you'd be even more surprised by Andy's presentation. He's arguing that we should also be considering regional inequalities in indicators like happiness and health, as well as wealth. And he's got data showing that spatial inequalities don't just arise between countries or states or cities, but if we measure carefully enough, it can even be observed between neighbouring streets. Clearly, if we want to reduce these inequalities, both of these factors are going to present problems for policymakers. So what metrics should we be tracking? And what should policymakers like Haldane himself be doing if we want to fix regional inequality? Right now we're on the lunch break, Andy's just grabbed his lasagna, and I'm hoping to get more detail on what he thinks about both of these questions while he eats it. Andy Haldane, welcome to Vox Talks.
Thank you very much.
And you can eat your lunch.
You too.
There's no rules on Vox Talks. First question, why is someone who works for a central bank concerned about regional inequality? It's beyond your remit.
Two dimensions, I'd say. One, speaking with my central bank hat on, just my central bank hat on, it's been increasingly clear to me, I suppose, over the many years I've been at the Bank of England now, that when building up a picture, even of the economy as a whole, the aggregate economy, sometimes that's best done in a top-down way, and sometimes that's best done in a bottom-up way, a very granular way, regional way, local way. And that's done through a combination of looking at the standard data metrics, you know, GDP and what have you, but also by gathering intelligence locally from conversations with businesses.
You have been very bottom up on this, haven't you? You've been going out and having those conversations.
Well, actually, I mean, it's not just me, and it's not, in some respects, not even recent. I mean, the Bank of England has had a regional network of agencies for, in some cases, 150 years. And we've used those, particularly the last 50 or so, for intelligence gathering on the ground at a local level about how businesses, in particular businesses, are doing. Recently, partly because we found that intelligence so valuable, we've scaled up our efforts and indeed expanded beyond companies to speak to local charities, to educational establishments, to citizens directly, to local government, to get those sort of many different lenses, if you like, on how well, or in some cases, how less well things are going. So it's very much a blend of the data at a top-down aggregate level, and a bottom-up, sometimes more qualitative picture. And it's the fusion of the two, I think, that gives us the best possible lens on how the whole economy is doing, which, of course, one of the things that central banks do for a living.
One thing we do know about regional inequality is it didn't arrive recently. It's something that has been on the political agenda and not. At the moment, it is. Our Prime Minister's talking about levelling up. Yeah. Why is it so much on the agenda now?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I can't think of a time in my working life when this issue has been further up the political agenda than it is at the moment with the current government. And they've made that absolutely clear that, you know, after they've got Brexit done, the next priority is so-called levelling up. My understanding of which would be, you know, closing some of those gaps spatially, regionally, between those areas doing well and those areas doing less well.
Yes, because this does imply, what are we levelling up? Is it just income?
Well, that's certainly one dimension. You know, having a job and getting paid matters a lot to people, and rightly so. But it's not just income. And I do think part of this conversation ought to be about not just financial, but non-financial factors. You know, how connected people feel, how engaged people feel, how happy people feel. And sometimes that can give a somewhat different regional picture than the one we get from looking at income. So I think it is income. It's financial factors, it's income, it's wealth, it's productivity. It's all things bright and beautiful for economists. But it's some of those non-financial, non-pecuniary factors as well that we know matter a lot to people's lived experience, to their sense of well-being, their sense of community, and ultimately their happiness. So I think leveling up, if all that happens was that financial factors began to converge, that would be good news. I think even better news, though, if some of those broader metrics were brought into greater alignment as well.
One of the challenges for the policymakers of levelling up or the economists of regional inequality is to be able to measure some of those success factors or to make use of the data that we already have. And we do have much better access to data than we used to do, don't we?
We do, and that's good. That's great that we have multiple sources of data now that give us a rather more granular picture of how the different parts of the country, regions are doing. Fair to say, there's still some distance to travel on the numbers, on the statistics, on the official statistics in particular. For example, if you're getting a picture of regional GDP, that requires you to come up with regional measures of price deflators. Mm. And right now, they are not in as good shape as anyone would wish. So this is still work in progress. But the very fact that this has risen towards the top, if not at the top, of the political agenda, I think provides some go forward for efforts to improve our data, as well as efforts to make greater use of those data, put it to work in ultimately setting better policy. So I think this is all directionally right, but we're playing a game of catch up. The regions are catching up, and we as policymakers are also catching up data-wise and policy-wise.
The fact that we have been doing regional policy now for as long as anyone can remember and we still have these problems rather implies that we haven't cracked it yet. Do you think that we have a very good idea of what we're doing and we're just not doing it well, or are we still trying to work out what's the best thing to do?
I think it's a bit of both. Truth be told, and this is true internationally, that the importance of regional policy has rather waxed and waned over the years. There's been times when it's been important and we've seen waves of devolution, and there's been times when it's been seen as rather less important and there's been a pulling back in the degree of delegation and devolution to the regions. I think there is quite a body now of international experience and evidence about what has worked for some cities in particular. I think we're much better placed than we would have been 20 or 30 years ago to know the ingredients that make for a successful city. And some of those lessons are ones that we in the UK can heed and learn from and hopefully seek to replicate. In fact, we have seen some of those things replicated in some of our cities, some of our more successful cities, not just London. I think it becomes tougher, and the evidence is somewhat less well-developed when it comes to how best to level up, to use those words, some of the satellite surrounding towns and cities, and in particular, some of the more disconnected communities. I think there's a much more open question about what's best done and what best policy-wise can seek to close the gap. That by itself shouldn't be a council of despair. It puts the onus back onto academics, CPR network, policymakers like me to flesh out that evidence base and to come up with some policy conclusions that work for the great many people who don't live in cities and are feeling disconnected and dissatisfied.
Because one of the focuses of policy has been regional, and we've had city-based policies. But some of the evidence that you presented shows that outcomes really differ street by street. And that is a real challenge for policy, isn't it?
It is a real challenge. You're right. I mean, one of the themes of the talk, Tim, was just how local economies can be.
Yeah,
almost certainly borough by borough. But actually within boroughs, you can get some stark differences. I think step one is a recognition of that. And even now, I'd say there's sometimes, often, not as much recognition of those differences as they ought to be, the kind of perils of averages, if you like. Step two would then be to think about what might be done to begin to close the gap. I mean, it's unrealistic, I think, for any of us to be setting an expectation of fully closing all gaps in the economy. That, yeah. You know, what's true of individuals and what's true of companies is true of regions as well. But where the UK sits today is that those differences, one, have been growing quite materially over the most recent past, and two, are materially larger than those in equivalent other economies around the world. And that suggests some of those differences are not the natural product of a market forces. And even if they are, the scope to do some reversing of them or closing of those gaps. And some of that will be regional, some of it will be sub-regional, and some of it will be within individual local authorities or boroughs.
It's interesting that you are pointing out that a lot of the work modelling this comes from outside economics in related disciplines, geography particularly, but also from the commercial sector as well, where people have been making simulations about how complex systems like cities can work and can work better. There's something here for economists to pick up on and maybe take off in their direction.
I think so. Piecing together the data, now more granular data, is all well and good and definitely valuable for drawing pictures and telling stories, which is what I was really doing today. Mm. But if we're to set policy, we need a framework for gluing together that data and a more consistent and comprehensive framework. And that's what we typically call a model. And such a thing we haven't quite got right now, or I haven't certainly stumbled across it right now, when it comes to asking or answering those regional questions. That of necessity, by definition, would be a rather disaggregated, a rather granular modelling framework. And as you mentioned, I think we can draw inspiration and indeed some degree of comfort from what other disciplines and other domains have done with their granular data to build a more consistent and comprehensive picture of the system they're studying. And that system could be a company, which of course is no more or no less than a kind of mini economy. It could be a city, which is also no more or no less than a mini economy. We've seen those sorts of systems techniques applied in all the natural sciences and a number of the other social sciences to understand complex networks of various types, of which the economy is a classic case. Why not? With the data coming on stream and with the technological constraint on simulation having been loosened, begin to apply those self-same techniques to understanding our economy at both the aggregate and the very disaggregate regional level. I think that'd be a kind of fantastic agenda for the economics profession, working hand in hand with other disciplines who've already made some progress on this front.
Andy Haldane, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
I'll let you get back to your lunch now.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We've got new episodes every Friday, so why not subscribe? And remember, you can catch up with 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.